Aloha, and welcome to another Candid Conversation. Today, we're joined by two interesting gentlemen, Mike Pence and Metz Kramer. I call them gentlemen because over the next 15 to 30 minutes, I'm sure they'll change your mind about that term. Good day, gentlemen.
Good day, sir.
Good day. Afternoon.
Good afternoon for you, yeah. We watch an Italian real estate company. A good guy is British, and he says, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to another, you know, it's kind of weird. I think most people are familiar with Metz. We've done a series of podcasts together, and he's written blogs for a while. Mike, how about you give everybody a bit of a thumbnail about who you are and what you're all about?
Sure. So my name is Mike Pence. I am the vice president of Calvin Group Incorporated. We are a equipment dealer that all we do is buy and sell asphalt paving equipment around the world. And we've been doing it since 1996. I tried to avoid the industry like the plague, and it didn't work. So I got out of college, and as I was talking to Ron earlier, I worked for an industrial lighting company where we designed signal relays, and it was kind of like Six Sigma lighting, basically, like in an assembly plant. We would help determine and set up lighting schemes so that you'd know if you were out of materials at a station and have a master control board and all that fun stuff. So I kind of got quickly thrown in over my head, doing some customer service, some programming. I did the purchasing in Germany, troubleshooting, kind of what name you. And after that, I went the complete opposite direction and went Mad Men and worked for a product development firm called Fitch. And I was there for a year or so. I really, again, one of the trends that you'll see as we discuss anything is I'm always thrown in over my head, but that's where I like to swim and choke. And and so at Fitch, you know, I worked with Apple and LG. I worked with Specialized on all their structural packaging. We redesigned all the Bic pens and Sanford pens that many of you probably use. I got a really healthy dose of branding, marketing. What does that look like in terms of industrial design? And it was just an overall great experience. And as the market started to tank 2008 or so, they decided to get rid of all product development and just focus on retail design. They were also behind all the Abercrombie and Fitch limited brands. If you've been to the Apple store in New York, we designed it. The one in Arizona, we designed Payway, all sorts of interesting things like that. So they wanted to focus on retail design and retail experience. And so I, at that time, they asked me, they said, do you want to stick around? And I said, okay, sure. What accounts? And they said, well, Victoria's Secret and Bath and Body Works. And I said, do I look like a Victoria's Secret guy or Bath and Body Works guy that would understand it as opposed to look at it? And it was like, no, probably not. And so I came on board with my dad then in 2008 to do a little bit of marketing, web design, some sales stuff. And, you know, the rest is kind of history. Now I'm stuck in it. So
one of the interesting things about, I think, all of us is that in our early work lives, we were all given opportunities that we didn't know were opportunities at the time. We were making money because that's what we were expected to do. We were doing work. We never were afraid of taking on new things. We were always over our head. And that's one of the characteristics that I like to be around. Too many in our industry are status quo protectors, risk averse. I think all three of us are the other side of that coin. And so we've got a whole host of different subjects we can be talking about. And for those of you listening, Mike and Metz have agreed that we'll do this maybe every month and a half or so. So we'll start a series. If you like it, let us know. If you want specific subjects covered, let us know, because we have a pretty broad range of interests. I suspect the two things that we should be playing with first are branding and the digital dealership. And Metz, let me ask you to lead that. Which one do you think we should hit first?
Well, I mean, we've got our first guest here, Mike, so we're obviously going to have to start with branding.
Okay.
But I think it also plays really well into, you know, this other aspect of a topic that you and I have talked about a lot. You know, what does it really mean And where does branding play a role in it? And Mike and I, both being involved in the IEDA, have talked about this a bunch of times, and especially in context, I think, of, you know, the difference between people who are, you know, built on one person, either the cult of personality or the lone wolf, as Mike likes to call them. And then I think it's really important to kind of understand the power of developing a brand and an identity that kind of motivates itself, that where you take on your own, where the organization takes on its own personality, and that helps drive everyone forward. So, but it seems like the natural starting spot for me.
Okay. So on the branding issue, Mike, I it's very difficult. It's very easy to have a lone wolf type of brand.
Yes.
But that also is very limiting as far as capacity and potential. Mm-hmm. What would you say, look at your dad's business or the previous jobs you've had, what would you say the single, if there was one, critical element is in developing a brand?
So for me, I'll always draw everything back to, I like to write, and so I like to draw everything back to storytelling. And I think being able to figure out what your story is, and I've got a great example of that. When you are just one guy, you kind of embrace, you are the story. It's who you are. It's your personality. It's your attitude. It's your work ethic. It's in your integrity. It's what tools you decide to use. There's a lot of things that come into play that way, but having a basic understanding of what you do and what your impact is, I think is probably the biggest thing. Best example I can give is out here. So about, we moved out to Denver in 2011. About 2012, the equipment industry tanked. We tend to, on the asphalt side, we tend to be recession-proof. And our recession dip happens either 2 years before or 2 years after a normal recession for everybody else. And so as we dipped, I actually took another job at the same time I was doing Calvin Group stuff and ran a, I was director of client services for a marketing firm here in Fort Collins. And one of the customers that came in, it was kind of like, it was kind of one guy shop. And what he did is he designed water sensors, and he made these, if you asked him, what do you do? Well, I make these sensors that they measure the pH, and they make this, and acidity, and they measure contaminants, and they do this. And he'll tell you all of these things that the product does.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, what do you do? He's like, well, we sell these. And I'm like, okay, what are they used for? I'm trying to get at something more, something that he's aspiring to, that his company is actually doing, that isn't just the bare bones manufacturing description, right? And what I come to find out is here, he manufactures most of the sensors that go into the aquifers that make sure our aquifer and drinking water is safe. And I said, no, that's what you do. You design products that make our water safer because you can measure it. And just that little nuance, and you'll hear a lot from me where I talk about the nuance and the difference between saying something this way and then emphasizing it this way, it can be two different things as far as I'm concerned. And so as soon as he started talking about that, it's like, okay, I can buy into that. I can check into that. I can get other team members on board. I can, if I bring other people on, that's something they can aspire to. In our industry, with the, I call them the lone wolf salesman, it's no different than my father. My father is, I obviously like him because I work with him and we get along well. But he's the ultimate sales guy. Everybody loves him. He's got a super sharp mind, knows the equipment, knows how to deal. He's amazing at that. But now, how do we talk about ourselves so it's not just the Mark Pence show? Like, how do we attribute anything to Calvin Group? Well, you know, when we talk about Calvin Group, we talk about our combined experience, not just him. We say over 30 years of experience, we buy and sell asphalt paving equipment around the world. And that's like our concise story thing. And then the way we talk about it is not in terms of widgets or units moved. It's about what can we do for our customers or for businesses or the dealerships. I like to say that we augment people's businesses. And so it's like, how do you try to figure out, and that could be different for everybody. It might be just fine to have one guy. But what I found is that for businesses that want to grow and have more responsibilities and more employees, I find finding those things that you can unify yourself around that's that are aspirational, that latching onto those key story points, I always find is the creates the most effective brand. Look at Apple, right? Apple runs design simple and they want it to be easy to use. Do they use the absolute cutting edge processors and stuff like that? Until the recent silicone series, they didn't. It was just, what could they get that was stable and fit the bill? It wasn't cutting edge or anything, but people still bought it because of the experience that they have and the story that Apple tells through their branding. And so for me, I kind of latch on to that idea and try to look at anything that we do as how can we articulate ourselves better? And so that's like kind of like my brand philosophy, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. It comes back to, I think it's a very similar approach. Every employee that works anywhere, I'd like to have them in a group setting and say, okay, what do you do?
Yeah.
And everybody can tell you what they do.
Yeah.
And most, they should be able to tell you what to do. Then the next question I ask is, well, how do you do that? And you were talking with Fitch and different things that, you know, you were kind of let loose, yeah. Let's go. And then the third question, which is really the clincher, is why do you do that? And unless you've got that aspirational piece, mm-hmm. Apple, it's a perfect example. Their first computer, Wozniak, you know, it's a pretty brilliant guy, but Jobs with the marketing side, the branding side, was what made it happen. And Metz is a similar situation. He's a worker bee, but a creative worker bee trying to find ways to make his life easier and at the same time making the business better, which is why he's doing what he's doing now. I don't mean to put strategies into your head, Metz, but I think that's kind of what you do, isn't it?
I think so. I have to think about, Mike, how you started it. And Ron, you kind of alluded it to as well, is the first thing is to actually understand what you are doing. And I think that's so often forgotten. Like, I think often the branding conversation, in any industry, but especially in ours, that gets missed is to try and understand what you're actually doing, like, and define that before you start the conversation about what is it that you want to be, like, what brand. We start the conversation, what brand do you want to develop, without understanding where you are. And you know, I did the student works painting thing when I was in school, and back then, I was very technical. I was a good painter, and I thought I was selling paint jobs. And even the organization, the franchise organization, didn't realize until 10 years after I was with them that it finally figured out we don't sell paint jobs. Like, we sell students going to school. And the minute they figured that out and changed their training and changed, you know, put that in the heads of the managers who ran their little franchises, I mean, the numbers I see these guys post now in sales just blow whatever I did away. And I was one of the top managers when I did it, you know? And so I think it's really important to start there. I had a conversation with another dealer this morning, and the same kind of topic came up, you know, the understanding where it is you bring value. It was a small rental house. You know, if you only think that you rent equipment, then you're going to approach your customers differently. If you come to realize that, hey, what I do is I enable them to get their daily work done, and that's important, that's where a lot of my value comes from, then you can really start a new discussion around, okay, if we really understand what we do, then how do we want to then project our brand? Like, do we want to create a brand that aligns with that, or that we want to change, et cetera?
I'd like also to think that the brand is something that opens up a question, a communication, if you will, with the person you're talking to. You know, when I started out, people would say, well, what do you do? And I say, well, I help you make more money. And it instantly said, well, how the heck are you going to do that? Right. So now we can get in. Now we're past the door. We're in the room. We're talking. My daughter, who was in early high school or grade school at the time, went away to a summer camp. And she said, you know, the same thing. What do your parents do? My dad cuts the fat. They said, where the heck did you hear that? You know, how did this But again, if you can get that in people's heads so that the brand itself provokes a discussion, I don't really understand. Why does Apple try to start? They started selling computers. Fine. They sell phones. Oh, they don't sell phones. You know, it's the whole thing. Why do you buy from Apple?
There's a couple great examples. But the one that's sticking out most in my mind is there's a great on one of the McDonald's documentaries that just recently came out. And there it's two guys sitting in a room and they're talking and they say, no, you don't understand what McDonald's is. You're not selling hamburgers. What you're doing is leasing real estate. And it's like, you just totally changed the idea of what you're actually doing. It's the idea of experience versus like product focus, right? Or a tire salesman. Is the other example that I've heard from people is you can have a guy who wants to sell you tires and you walk into their lobby and sure there's copy, but it might be a day or two old and everything's a guy all oiled up and everything else comes in and he's like, yeah, I can change your tire. Of course he can give you a good tire, but then you go to a Les Schwab or one of these other more polished places that you walk into and you have an experience with them that, hey, here's someone smiling, no oil on them whatsoever. Everything is nice. The floor is clean. Here's a fresh cup of coffee. Here's some donuts. What do you need? And suddenly you can recognize the difference between good branding and bad branding, right? It's a different mentality. It's a full philosophy is what it really is. And it's not, a lot of people want to try to adopt some sort of branding and say, oh, well, my brand is this. And if it's inauthentic to who you are and to who your company is, it's not going to be effective and you can't really build stuff off of that.
The key on that, and you bring up a great point with McDonald's being in the real estate business. The other example that's perfect, Domino's Pizza.
Yeah.
They're in the transportation business.
Yeah.
People didn't figure that out. And so, you know, you look at Bed Bath & Beyond. What the heck is there? What's that business? Victoria's Secret. I mean, what's that business? It's how it gets presented and put out. There's a wonderful guy on YouTube who runs used to run one of the major advertising companies in the world. And it's about perspective. And he used an example of he's British, you go to a drinks party and there's no longer any smoking. Well, during a drinks party, you don't want to sit there talking all the time. It's tiring. But you occasionally want to just go and look out the window. Well, when you're looking out the window and you got a smoke in your hand, you're a philosopher. Then you're looking out the window and there's no smoke in your hand or anything, you're just a, you know what? It everything is perspective. So that brand and how we present it to the world is really critical. And I don't know that very many people think about it, Mike or Metz.
I'd agree with you there. And I think there are definitely a lot of dealers who don't really understand what it is they deliver. They don't spend the time on it. And if you don't, then I think you leave a lot of money on the table. I mean, when I talk about the value of branding, the reason it's important to do it is you leave money on the table. I mean, if you can't recognize where your value comes from to your customer, then you're going to be like everyone who doesn't get it and, you know, selling on price or selling on some other hard to differentiate on or hard to change. I remember the last OEM I was with. I mean, the sales guys complain. They can't sell on price. They can't sell on price. You know, we have the price has to go down. We're too expensive. And it's like, then you're selling the wrong thing. Like, you don't understand what we do. Like, A, we're the factory. That's how we have everyone else in this territory. B, you can't get, everyone else has to go to the factory through the dealer. We are, you know, but you have to find something else that brings that value.
Yeah. What I've always said, and people don't pay enough attention to it, is price is only important when every other element of the transaction is the same. And your job, our job as peddlers, salespeople, communicators, customer service people, is to make sure never is anything the same. That's what we do. We differentiate ourselves.
Yeah, and yet if you're in the new equipment sales area, everyone is on price, the performance, which is very similar, and then financing, and everyone's trying desperately to have 0%. That's not how you make a difference, and it isn't what's going to make the difference later on for your customer.
I always use the example, take excavators. It's a perfect example. Take every brand that's out there, paint them all the same, take off all the decals, and tell me what the differences are. And then the only difference that comes out is what your company does in supporting it and you as the person who's standing in front of the customer. And that's where the ultimate war is won, right? One-to-one, people-to-people, face-to-face. Let's go. And I think, Mike, said that's what you're selling on the telephone is an awful tough game, isn't it?
Oh, it's terrible. I had to make 50 calls a day, and I'd record them and then report them in a weekly meeting. And it was like, this isn't going to get us anywhere. How am I actually generating anything that is substantial or matters? And the best example that I give is when I talk to dealerships, one of the things that amazes me is, you know, we talk about what companies are really doing. A CAT dealer is really a parts and service company. Should be, in my opinion, because that's where you make your money. That's where the service happens. That's where you create brand loyalty. That's where you create an actual tangible experience as opposed to just the sales side. And so many people fall away from that. So many dealerships kind of fall away from that. And they say, no, I got to push pins, or I got to do this, or I got to meet my sales quota. And the reality is your sales quota is useless. If you're not keeping your mechanics and people constantly engaged with you, it's just going to falter.
Yeah, it's interesting. The same type of circumstance, good and bad. The Caterpillar family has been parts and service since Bill Blackie was the chairman back in the 50s. But Volvo has made a commitment a couple of years ago. They're going to electrify their complete fleet. There won't be a surviving dealer because the parts and service business on the electrical machine, there is none. It's an interesting transition. Now, I don't know that people are really thinking things through. Again, going back to what is your brand? Well, it's my name. It's on the building. You know, almost every Caterpillar dealer, John Deere dealer, Volvo dealer that's out there is a person's name. Mm-hmm. And okay, that's cool. That's my great, 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 great grandfather. You know, he was plowing fields behind a mule team. Well, fantastic. How's that relate to today? You know,
I've got a good example of that. So I gave a talk at Colorado State up here, and it was with the Sustainability Fellowship. And so these guys are postdoc, and they are doing their thesis, doing these research and stuff. And they get finished with it. They get their doctorate, and then they go look for a job. And they say, here's my resume. And it shows their research, and they hand them a copy of the thesis. And it's like, am I supposed to read this as a recruiter? Am I supposed to, like, who are you? Well, here's my thesis. No, who are you? Tell me about yourself. What do you bring to the table? Here's my thesis. And suddenly it's like, okay, this, I know you're qualified. That's why we're talking, right? But what are you bringing to the table that's going to fit into who we are, what we are, the culture? Elon Musk talks about it. And Tesla does recruiting this way, is they're not concerned about your CV. They're concerned about whether or not you're going to fit with the team and what kind of work ethic and attitude that you have, because they can teach everything else. And so there's that dichotomy that gets caught up when you're in the middle of something, whether it's your dealership, parts and service, or whether it's selling stuff, you get caught into the, I just do this. And the reality is you're actually impacting people a whole lot more than what you think you are. And the way that you view yourself tends to be very linear or very vertical, as opposed to
geometric
perspective, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. I see a lot of that in the consulting world.
Big time. I used to tease people about the fact when I was working with Caterpillar dealers, I could go anywhere in the world, get out of an airport, get to the curb and tell the taxi, take me to the Caterpillar dealer, and off they go. And then I was working a lot with Komatsu in Europe, and I'd get off in the airport and Frankfurt and say, okay, take me to the Komatsu dealer. Where are they?
Right.
So it's a perfect illustration of how ubiquitous a brand can become. Kleenex. It's not tissue. Polaroid. Right. It's not a camera. Yeah. You know, that should be what our issue is. And as we mentioned earlier, nobody really thinks about that. If one thing comes out of this particular discussion, conversation, I'd really like people to think about, what is your brand? What are you trying to say?
And what and are then you to people?
Get people behind that.
Yeah. It's like, what are you to people? One of the things that I always pitch to new customers, especially with dealers, is my job is to make you, yes, I sell you equipment, but my job is to make you the best contractor you are by providing you the equipment you need. And my job is to make you the best dealership and used equipment manager that you are by giving you proper trade values. Even if you don't let me sell it, whatever I do, if I can make you better at it, I'm doing my job correctly. And that's where our brand sort of comes from, is all, we want to be a tool that literally anybody in the industry can say, hey, I need some help. What do you think of this? And we're there. And there's a lot of stuff that we don't get paid for, but the stuff that we do get paid for is why we do it.
So Metz, if we use that as the closing statement, that this particular discussion conversation wraps around what that brand is intended to do, then the next one we deal with is, how can we build that? Does that sequence make sense to you?
I think that's really important. Mike and I were supposed to do this marketing branding thing in Chicago about a year ago, and Mike couldn't make it. And so I had to kind of restructure it sitting at the bar before the day before. Right. And we started, and this was one of the first questions that came up, and it led to a lot of discussion among a bunch of dealers, which was like, one, understanding who you are, first of all, like to really put that into perspective. And then, you know, what is it you think you want to be? Like the first two steps, because like we started this, a lot of people start on step three, which is like, I want to build a brand. But I think the first thing to do is figure out who you're going to talk to, how you're going to define and come to some sort of clarity in realizing what you are. One of the dealers in the room that day brought it up, and we were talking, and they didn't even really understand that a lot of the value that they have was simply that they were an independent dealer, but their name had made the biggest difference. Like even in the room, they were highly respected among other dealers, you know. And if that was kind of the starting point, saying, okay, like, what are we going to develop? And if you look at them now, I think you can start to see, like, they're really starting to capitalize on understanding what they are and why people were doing business with them and why that should trump pricing or anything. Like, why would you sell the same machine to a customer than your competing dealer if it's coming from this dealer, you know, that has a long history of backing it up, and, you know? Yeah. So I think that's, and it's tricky sometimes. Like I said, with my painting thing, it took me 20 years to realize what was really happening. And so you have to ask some people, sometimes maybe it might be your customers, like honest conversations, you know?
It's not easy.
No, we did maintenance contracts years ago for underground mines and really detailed maintenance on underground scoop trams and stuff. And this discussion came up over axles and rebuilding axles. And after a while, the guys are like, well, the mine guys are like, let's put an axle on the shelf, because the time it takes to change the axle in our terms of having 400 people underground waiting for that machine going back to work, you know, that's way bigger dollars. And that was the realization, like, we're not there to like sell a parts and service contract. We're there to make sure that our contract is designed so that they never stop running, you know, and quite literally cost be darned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's so trivial at those points.
Yeah. So I think I'd like to put a wrap on this conversation at that point. The importance of brand can never be overstated. The understanding of how to create a brand is something that hardly anybody pays attention to. And I think the discussion that we've had kind of highlights that. Mike, you agree with me on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I wrote a little bit about this in an article, in that Lone Wolf article, about some practical things that you can think of this that we can talk about next time, and some good examples of, okay, now what? We talked about brand. It's great. Does that mean I post three times on Facebook? And usually no.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost always no.
Yeah. So, there's some good direction there, I think.
Okay, good. So with that, I'd like to thank Mike and Metz for this discussion, this conversation, and thank the audience for paying attention to us and listening, and hope you tune in when we get together on how to make that brand. Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We appreciate your support. Should you have any thoughts or comments, please don't hesitate to contact us at www.learningwithoutscars.com. The time is now. Mahalo.